Welcome back to Toys on Tap. Holy crap, this week is going to be a good one. With 9 to 5 Warriors, Brandon's Brain come on the podcast. They talk through all the stuff going on with their Kickstarter this week and all the good stuff coming. And you've seen their toys. Don't wait. Go back that Kickstarter. Go do what you do. If you want to support Toys on Tap, you can like, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. It's free for you, means the world for us. If you want to support even further, you can jump on the Patreon, patreon.com/toysontap. $3 a month gets you extra content of the nitty gritty. $5 a month gets you the video interviews. And so not many people actually see those. So that's a cool little thing that we do. And if you just want to follow us on all socials to stay up on all the cool artists and everything, it's at Toys on Tap. Now let's jump into this week's episode of Toys on Tap. What up, man?
Let me clean the lens. How you doing, bro?
Good. Is that what are we talking? Like you just have all those cool toys in the back. What are we doing?
Well, we should do a tour.
Yeah, do a little tour for me. Show me, like, back right behind you over your left shoulder. Yeah. Is that X-Men?
Yeah. So yeah. This is a toy biz section. Let me see if I can hold on. Go back to Toy Biz.
Heck yeah, heck yeah.
At this LED little light or light up light. This is hard to do when you can't fucking see. There you go. Then the first cabinet's full of all these vintage goodies up here. This is the modern remakes.
Yeah.
Those two vehicles, the third one too. Would love to get that, but these are all vintage stuff. WWE shit, X-Men, Exo Squad, Spider-Man. More X-Men, Terminator 2. This starts getting that oddball stuff, like Killer Tomatoes.
Toy Story. Love it.
Bucky O'Hare in the bottom. Plunderlings is a modern line. Yeah, and then I just started collecting video games.
Okay.
Just consoles so far, so I only have like two video games. I got to, A, get my collection from back home.
Yeah.
And I can collect a couple more shit. But these are some dope shit that...
Creepy Crawlers.
My favorites. More Ninja Turtles vintage. Food Fighters, the entire lineup. Vehicles. This is cool. I just bought this like a Jack Specific. Did like two turtles that are like basically like 4 feet tall.
So good. I, like, God.
Created like this pizza thing.
Sick.
And then Batman, some random shit.
Yeah, man, you're crushing it. Your collection is... dope
stuff. And then I, because we're having hurricanes in, so like I had to bring in like all my inventory, but this corner is usually clean. Some cool shit. This is like the 95 Warriors Hall of Fame over here. A couple articles behind the screen and shit.
I gotta put your cassette tape up there, actually. That's right.
I didn't say anything, but you know,
I have it here, but I need it. Yeah, that's pretty dope, actually.
It's crazy. This is, I think, your third episode.
Yeah, dude.
Which I'm game for. And I can't wait to talk about what's coming because it has to do with the current Kickstarter and stuff. But like always, before we do what we do, introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, what you do.
Hey, guys. I'm Brandon Braswell, the creator of 9to5 Warriors. When you punch out, they come punching in.
My guy. I have three of them. I'm pumped. I enjoy them. They're on the shelf behind me. Killer work. It was like, I mean, this is kind of a catch up and like a what's coming too, because it was this long stretch where you were trying to get these toys made. And then finally it happened. And not only did it happen, like, it came out with a bang. You're in stores, you're on racks, you're at shows, like all kinds of stuff. So first, I mean, catch me up on like what it's feeling like to be a toy making all-star. Like what's that like?
It's still, honestly, still a huge struggle. Let me put that out there first. It's been tough. And it has been a long ass journey, which is crazy to think 2 years ago was when I was doing the the last kind of big starter raid for pre-orders, mm-hmm. and I revealed the entire lineup, you know, of all the prototypes. So it's taken 2 years to now do the Kickstarter for the remaining batch. As you stated, the first four were released and they just started shipping back in March. So like everything's still surreal in that regard. Like seeing pictures of them in people's collections and just seeing reviewers and like just the positive reactions, it's been amazing. But it's still like, damn, like it's been a struggle to find the demographic that really wants these, mm-hmm. because the market is flooded right now. Like just there's just literally remakes and remakes of everything that used to be my target demographic. When this concept came out in 2012, I feel like there was a hole in the nostalgia market. And I don't know, now it's been like left and right, something new. So it's kind of just hard to find your own place for it. But it's been amazing to see, you know, the people's reactions that do get it and like just how far it's come.
Yeah, it feels like the market, that's a good way to say it, like the market is flooded, because I mean, we're watching people, man, this is going to sound like a crazy statement, and I know what I'm about to say. Yeah. Toy making has never been easier. Now, let me quantify that. Not that it's an easy process or not that it's easy to do that, but having the ability to get to producers, get to Kickstarter, get to like the ability to get to those things is the easier part. The ability to have them happen without any issues, not so easy. And I think that because of that, there's so many toys and so much going out in production. I mean, Monstors just like, yeah. they're ready and they're roaring to go. You have your Kickstarter up and running right now. And so it's like, there's so much happening in the toy world at a time in which we're seeing the toy industry not do so well.
Yeah. And it's wild because there are reports of them doing well. And at least, you know, there were new reports of like adults being, you know, one of, now I forget it now. It's basically the adults are now the top purchasers, no longer for, you know, the preschoolers and whatnot, just purchasing for themselves. So you have these top industries clearly producing toys that are, again, remakes and catering to this already built-in demographic and market. And then you have the indie community just rising and going strong. Mm-hmm. And go back to 12 years ago, the indie community was very just around focused around like art toys. And only a select few had the access to the factories. And there's typically kind of vinyl and stuff. And there's only like, you know, Four Horsemen that kind of were doing their own thing still. Obviously, they've been around for 20 years. Super 7 was doing Reaction. Obviously, I don't consider them the indie, but they clearly were indie at that time. But yeah, you're right. The floodgates have opened. The barrier entry has lowered, but it's still a challenge. Mm-hmm. But the beauty is like those that are stepping up and trying to like, I want to create something, like have access to it. You can create a website easily. You can connect with artists easily. You can do podcasts. You can do all these other things to get your brand out there. So the time is now. It's pretty awesome. But you go in there with the right intentions, you will not, I don't want to say you will not get rich. I hate that negativity. Don't go in for money because it's not easy. And like the money that you see getting raised on Kickstarter, literally all just goes to,
yeah,
to factories.
There is, you know, one time I saw a comment that was like, oh, you're just getting rich off this. And I wanted to like reach to the computer because it's like there's the Kickstarter is at the limit so that people get paid and things and factories start moving. Yeah. It's not this moment of like, oh, you're scraping $5,000 off the top. If it was like we would all try to do Kickstarters.
It's tough. And that's what's cool though. Like I said, all these new brands coming out are like, it's badass. Like we truly are in a golden era of toy making again. Like it's reflective of the 80s and 90s of that time period where these lower names at the time, like Kenner's and, you know, Toy Biz and all the other stuff, creating things that they thought would be cool and maybe partially what they wanted to see out there and kind of throwing crap on a wall to see what sticks. And that's kind of what's happening in the indie toy sector, which is just phenomenal to be part of, you know?
Yeah. It's an interesting time and I'm pumped for it, but we're not here for this time. We're here for you. You posted something that was wicked. It was amazing to see, like, on top of the toys that you have produced, you have lunch boxes, a thermos, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
You've got some crazy merch with stickers and different little crafts and like a box and cards, all kinds of stuff.
Comic books, all the stuff.
Yeah, just rocking the house. And on top of that you have, like, you're now a distributor for your own stuff to these different places.
Yeah.
And you posted a clip. I don't, it was like at a show where someone had a stand that was just you.
Oh yeah. 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 That's a good friend.
Wild.
Awesome. I'm trying to do that now too, because I've been paying attention. I've been trying to get out to trade shows, but I'm a new father as well. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, like, trade shows are so draining. Like, I'm not like an outgoing person that can talk, you know, but overall, like, it's draining to do one day after 2 days, 3 days. Like, I'm just not built for that. So I'm trying to figure out ways to get into more trade shows. And I'm glad this guy, this buddy out here, Fell Video, he does these awesome video VHS displays. If you are seeing the video in the background.
Oh, sick.
He does these VHS wall arts, which are super dope.
Drop so that name. Like, yeah, who is he?
Faux Video.
Faux Video. Okay.
Yeah. FAUX Video. Yeah.
Awesome.
So he was like, hey, can I carry some 9-to-5 Warriors? I'm going to 2 shows. I want to see how they're doing. I'm like, hell yeah. I'll figure out. Like, we'll split commissions and whatnot. But yeah, he created that stand for me. And it's like, he's going all out. But he's so good at that type of stuff. His display booths are always top notch. Mm-hmm. Like right now, they look like a video store.
Meet Chum, the adorably deadly hammerhead shark creation from Pocket Salsa and Toys on Tap that has come from the depths to join your toy shelf.
Sharks! Hey, get out of the water! Sharks!
He can be found in the wild later this year in several different blank colors, and in some cases, rarer painted versions of Chum can be found. This chubby little guy comes in at 4 inches tall with 1 point of articulation.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
He is the perfect mix of cute and deadly.
I am never going back in the water.
Don't miss out on your chance to capture one of these little guys before they're gone.
But that's something I totally want to see. If like other, I see a lot of retailers go to a lot of different toy shows. I'm curious,
yeah,
would that be something they can represent 9-to-5 Warriors, set up a little booth or something? Because that's the hardest part of getting out there and like doing these trade shows that really make a difference.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we've talked a lot about this, right? Like you and I hung out, would say a whole day at DesignerCon.
Yeah, DesignerCon.
Yeah, which that's a lot of me. So you made it through the day. And we talked about like what we could do together and stuff. And it's just a lot that goes into those. I don't have a booth, and it's insane to watch what people do and create. And to see that other people like did that was insane. It was like an amazing thing to watch happen. I would say that you're a saint, being a new father and then still doing all this and still rocking it and finding ways. That's insane. Like, you're still killing it.
I believe in the line. Like, I know it has the potential to be a strong IP. Like, I know it can be on TV. I know it can be a movie. I see it so clearly because I just believe in the characters. I believe in the story, the characters and the story that I've created. Like, I know the potential's there. And it's just a matter of when at this point. And that's what keeps me in it. Because, like I said, it's been a hard struggle. And, like, there's been plenty of times where I'm like, okay, maybe it's just not the right fit. These toys are unique. Not every collector's into them. Great. Maybe I should just throw in a towel. And I shit you not, like, do the divine wills of the God. Like, I'd get DMs that day or emails like, hey, I just discovered you. My kid loves you. Oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. And like, I work for Paramount. Can we talk on this? Like, literally anything that happens right at that moment where I'm like, should I throw in a towel? Like, what's keeping me in this?
Yeah.
Because the sales are doing great. But it was still a marginal, you know, like, I created 750 of each SKU, which is pretty massive, but still so so minuscule in the grand scheme of it. Like, I'm still very much in the debt bucket. But it's little stories and messages like that that I see that people's reactions. I'm like, okay, just stay in this because I know the potential. Like, I am still in love with this character. There's a reason that I started this in 2012 now, and I'm still at it. Like, in my heart, I just believe in it. So at this point, I'm kind of just like tempering my mind and the self-doubt and just going with the flow.
Which, that's, it's crazy. My hope is that there is the same way that like things are now so reachable in the toy world, it's happening across every industry. So like you have indie people that are doing cartoons and indie people that are doing movies and stuff. Let's see this as a freaking cartoon. Holy jeez. You already, like, there's already so much animation that's gone with the commercials and stuff and how they move and do that stuff. So to see if a studio picks it up would be insane.
Yeah, that's the dream, man. I think it's weird because I always, I stated this, like, I always believe the toys that are really genuinely, like, that makes a toy come from story. And I'm kind of like doing the chicken before the egg type of thing. I'm creating the toys and trying to inject the story wherever I can, whether it's the back of the card, the trading cards, the comic books, the little videos that I can produce on my own. I'm trying to get the story injected any which way, especially in this modern time. But I think the real power will be unlocked if there was a TV show, of course. Like, there'd just be so much potential, you know?
Yeah, and I think what's funny is, like, have you ever heard of the Netflix show? It's like mini shows. It's called Love, Death, and Robots.
Yeah, those are sick. Yeah.
So those would be so cool as if they were toys.
Yeah.
But if they chose you, toys are done.
Yeah, it's true.
Literally true. Work. So
got,
I mean,
Netflix, come on.
The hard part is always like looking at where we are. Point out to me some highlights. I mean, from 2012 to now. That's 12 years of really cranking out one IP and doing all you can to make this good. You've worked with legendary sculptor Scott Hensey. You've worked with digital sculptors to take those into the digital world. You've sculpted, resculpted, resculpted, and you've got some crazy cool characters. So take me through some of the big highlights so that we don't get down into the, like, man, it's been a long road, but like, but you're here. So tell me some highlights through the last 12.
Honestly, it's the it's getting them out there. And like I said, the biggest thing has been when the fans reach out and they show me they're part of their collection. But the highlight is when their kids are playing with it. Mm-hmm. Because I started this as a kid toy line, you know? I wanted to create something for the generation growing up today that I just felt there was nothing on their toy shelves that represented anything similar to what we grew up with.
Yeah.
However, there's an abundance of remakes of what we grew up with, not tied to any content that they currently are around, you know?
Right.
It's funny. I just saw like the Voltron release the 40th anniversary thing. It's like this cute little people box and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And like these kids have no idea what Voltron is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's 40th anniversary. Where's the TV show? At least we're re-release a TV show that they like. But yeah, I mean, the highlights are just keep chugging along. Collaborating with new artists, collaborating with the designers, like, it's just keeping the business alive and the characters alive. It's just like keep moving forward. Like I said, it's just been such a surreal moment. It's like it's still taking it in. Like March feels like just yesterday when they started shipping. So it's like I launched the Kickstarter. Like, oh shit, it's ready. I don't want to get into November and launch a Kickstarter. So like kind of rushed everything to like make sure I could reach that launch date.
Yeah,
and most of the work was already done, you know,
which is crazy. So now that we're at launch date of the next set, the next wave, tell me about this next wave that's coming out, because currently on my shelf, the two big baddies and they each got a henchman. I love it. They're sitting there. They're great. So tell me about the next ones.
So we got Lieutenant Lead, which is Major Eraser's right-hand man. He's the pencil, one half of the pencil that was broken together, like broken apart by the lead character, Alan, in the comic book. You can learn more about him. But Lieutenant Lead's a pencil, super straight edge, literally like the perfect tool for any job type of thing, or perfect supply for any job, as I put it. Then we have his, on the opposing side, is Evil Brother number two, which is literally a double-sided pencil. So the story was, it's that like a single pencil by the creator of them all was Alan, and it was his favorite pencil. And then one day, like, it snapped in half. Him being resourceful, you know, sharpened one end, and it was still a pretty good pencil, still perfect to use. And the other oddball was a double-sided pencil. And he's like, I'll just figure out where to place you for later. And that, like, sentiment lingered with him. Like, number two constantly feels out of place and doesn't belong, and he just doesn't. He has that internal resentment towards the outside world for being an abomination in his eyes.
Yeah.
And the fact that he can't make a mistake. So we have those two. Then one of my favorites is Sergeant Spore. He's on the Break Room Bends as well. He's a giant, like, I say giant, but he's like 5.25 inches compared to the others. And I'll share, you know, obviously images and videos for you too. But he's made of a rotten sandwich. So he's like Colonel Custard's go-to man, the brute force of them. He's massive, he's strong, he's burly, but he's also dumb as hell because his brain is half rotten. So there's a comical element in there. And then the last but not least for the Break Room Bandits, which are the good, I'm sorry, for the Water Cooler Commandos, which are the good guys, is Bigger Deer Bouncy, who's a rubber band ball. He's super, like, the goofballs explosion specialist. He's been redesigned. Scott's original design was hand done, but I felt like the details were getting lost and a little muddled. So I just refined it, did a whole complete resculpt for the in the digital realm, and he just looks so much better. I feel I just, not to shit on anything with Scott did, of course, but like, it just, that character is so complex to hand sculpt compared to the brothers, Lieutenant Lead and number two, which he also did hand sculpt. So that one's done in full digital such. So was Scotchy, so was Corporal Can and Spore. So there's a good mix of digital and handheld in my line. And then those are the two of the four that are available right now through the Kickstarter. And if we reach our goal, we have some stretch goals. So at 60K, I believe, or 65K, I forget. But Specialist Sugar, who's like the shape-shifting artificial sweetener. She's like the mastermind. Coconut Custer's like trusted hand and loyal girl. So he'll come up with these evil master plans, and she'll like actually do delegation and slap the bandits in line. And then a fan favorite, which was a surprise to me, is Corporal Can. He's on, yeah, I believe, 75K, I believe. Corporal Can comes with three peanuts, and he's literally like the communications expert for the Water Cooler Commandos. Super awesome sculpt. Again, that one was fully digital. What's cool is that three peanuts act as like, I like to think of that whole project as like the Army Man buckets. So like, where you get to play with a bucket as well.
Yeah.
So inside the bucket, the can in this case, are the like nutty spies. And ideally there's going to be an expansion pack for the more peanuts and more fun characters I can stick inside the Corporal Can. And that's pretty much those that have been revealed. There are two new characters I would love to reveal. I'm still waiting till we get a little closer just to show them off completely. But the other stretch goal that people are really excited about and I'm stoked about is called the Battle Bits.
Empire Blister.
Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 3.75 inch or 1/18. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available.
Empire Blisters.
Now sponsors Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
And these are literally like little plastic and rubber shaped pieces that mimic, you know, the look and feel of like a Kinect set for adults, but you're able to connect office supplies like real pencils and pens and tape rolls, even plastic utensils, things like that, to create your own vehicles, create your own bases, create accessories. It's just really a complete kit to just bring your own supplies.
Yeah.
So like, that was just built off of the demand and asking for, like, hey, is he going to have vehicles? Hey, is he going to have forts? Da, 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 da. And at the end of the day, this is always about just being a creative line. So, like, what better than give the creativity to the owners and the creators and let them create their own fantasies? Like, that's what's cool about the Battle Bits. They really are versatile, and you can create literally anything out of them.
Yeah, which the Battle Bits by far is my favorite, though I love all your characters. I love everything about this IP. The Battle Bits make this IP and just really solidify it in like toy history, because it reminds me of toy soldiers and how they like were using whatever they found to make these crazy vehicles. But it also makes it like, if I was a kid and a toy line came out and it said, hey, you just need to get these little connector pieces, but then just use whatever you find.
Yeah.
Crayons, holy crap. Pens, yeah. Pencils. Be awesome. And so it was just such a cool thing to see that that was one of the things that was coming out. Now, at BattleBits, I haven't seen looked all the way through it. Is that part of an expansion?
So that's going to be part of a stretch goal as well. So after Corporal Can is unlocked, the next stretch goal are BattleBits. And basically, that's going to come with a little bag, not a bag, literally, but like a package of 50 BattleBits. So on the screen, you'll see, in the Kickstarter, you'll see like how many pieces come with what. But basically, with 50 pieces, you're able to create either 1 to 3 sets, depending on how elaborate the sets are or vehicles are. But that's what's awesome about it, is like, try to make it super affordable. So like, they're around $25 a piece per that set of 50. And ideally you get a couple of them and you just start building as crazy shit as you want.
Yeah, and which is amazing.
The scale of this, the 9-to-5 Warriors, has always been like, I want them to live on your desk. I want them to be in your fridge or cabinets, wherever you could throw them, like create your own battle scenes with everyday surroundings. So the BattleBits really add to that. Like, you just literally create anything you want. And I have like 3 mock-ups, like a watchtower, you know, a catapult tank, and then what was the last one? Oh, like little helicopter thing. Mm-hmm. And like, that's just like the bare minimum of what we like kind of laid out, me and the designers. So it's like, I'm so excited for that to get funded, so I can see like what, again, people create and then share with me, because it's going to be endless.
Yeah, it's wild to see it all come together like this. Was the BattleBits, those connectors and stuff, where'd that idea come from? Because it wasn't something that was originally around, if I'm correct. But it just seemed like it came out of nowhere, and it was like the coolest edition. So where'd that idea come from?
It was in the back of my mind for a hot minute, maybe for 2-3 years, because after the first failed Kickstarter happened, if you look at my original videos, there's literally a pencil watchtower made, and there's a pen catapult system made. But I made them out of real supplies using real rubber bands and mm-hmm. hot glue and stuff like that. But looking at them, people are like, can I play? Like, can we buy those play sets? Can we make those? I'm like, actually, you just make them yourself. But like, of course, no one wants to do that. But it lingered in my head that like, people kept on asking for those and more vehicles and random stuff. And when I looked at those images, I'm like, damn, I really wish there was like a kit that I can create that basically looks like it's made out of rubber bands. Mm. So if you look at the BattleBits, they're all, you know, designed the deco to look like actual rubber band bits or gumballs or staplers and whatnot, or staples and paper clips. And so that's what's cool, is that like, I thought in my mind like that could work. I just didn't even wrap my head around how it could be feasible. Mm-hmm. Plus, I was still focusing on making the action figure, so I'm like, I just put it in the back of my mind. One day I'll invest in that.
Yeah.
And cut to last year, 2023, we went to Toy Fair, and I was working at the booth of Plunderlings, another indie line, and helping them out. And like, these 2 mechanical engineer students came up to the booth. We just started talking, and they're like, they just were instant, like, these are the guys that are going to make it. Cause they're talking about how they want to get into the toy industry, that they're really eager students. They love building with Legos, and they want to do modular systems with robots and like little things. They just were talking the right language. I'm like, I might have a project for you guys. It's still very early, and I have, you know, I have a lot to do, but let's talk. They're like, we have an internship in December. Maybe you can line up. So come December, I hired them, part of their internship. And it was like such an awesome process, because I gave them my ideas, showed them the prototypes that I like roughly made, and gave them like the exact like way that I would tackle this. Like, let's do a true canvas of, you know, current building systems, connects, Legos. Let's look at old school stuff, which I forget the name of, like, I'll have to look in the brief, but like, what was that one with like steel bits and stuff? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Basically old school building kits, like look at those basic kits and like what was initially offered, like what was possible outside of that gate, like was it right angle circles, like what could you do with those initial bits, and then do a canvas, go to like the dollar store, Staples, and look at like everyday office supplies, something that's easily attainable and cheap, you know, obviously pencils, pens, those good things. What else could we use? And then I was like, avoid anything sharp that could like poke people's eyes out, no thumbtack, nothing dangerous, because this can go sideways. And literally I gave them all that, like that brief. And then, and they came back to me like it was a homework assignment. Like they truly created like a workable thesis project, which was beautiful. So they presented me all their findings. They presented me the sketches that were like mixed with my sketches. These were the initial bits. And then from there, we just started refining. And then Battle Bits was born. Like it was such an awesome, like this was meant to be. Mm-hmm. And what's crazy is that was all done last year in December. And I completely like put it on the background. I'm like, okay, this is great. It was such a fun time working with you guys, but I have no means to make this right now. So like, I'm still waiting for at that time, wave one to finish in production. So it wasn't even shipping yet. It's like, all right, I'll see where I do with this later on.
Yeah.
So cut to the Kickstarter now. I'm like, I had it in my back pocket. I was like, this has to be a stretch goal. Like, let me just experiment how this looks. And the response has been wild. Like, people are really excited about it.
Gosh, dang it. And it's good. It like, it makes the toys come to life. I mean, we might've talked about this. We're almost at 200 episodes. So I can't remember who I talked to about some of these things, but when I was a kid, I would set up my toys and then like close, cause Toy Story had just come out, and then I close my door, like really tiny, and look in to see if they moved. And these breathe life into that stupid moment of my life. And so it's cool. Also the fact that we can, are you telling me that Toys on Tap can hire interns too? Like, how do you hire interns? Totally, that's dope. Thing.
You gotta find the right ones and pay them.
Yeah. Holy moly.
Get them to do help with marketing and edit your shit and all the other things.
Yeah. So tell me about the current Kickstarter and hopes. And I mean, obviously the hope is that it gets funded. That's always the hope for these. But what did we learn from the last time we ran this to this time? Is Big Bad Toy Store a part of this? Like all the questions surrounding this new Kickstarter.
Like I said, it's been a struggle. And I honestly keep trying to learn from my, what I call mistakes, but they're truly just, they are what they are. They're just like things that happen in my life that I just have to go with the flow truly to make this happen. So my very first Kickstarter that failed, and I was with the two Scott Hensey sculpts, the prototypes, they were basically straight from his hand photographed and put on Kickstarter and hit like enter and started marketing day one. That was my first mistake. I didn't do any pre-marketing. And the hype and attention happened like at the 23rd day mark kind of thing. And I was like, oh shit, there's not enough time. The second time around, I really hate Kickstarter, honestly. I love it and I hate it because it's nerve-wracking. It's like, it literally gave me anxiety weeks before. Just, I know putting this out there again, I'm like, fuck, if I fail, how fucking embarrassing. I can't do this again. All those negative thoughts that kept on swirling around my head. And I'm like, fuck. And I'm breathing through this shit. And so I went with Big Bad Toy Store the second time around. And although it was successful and I got four made, it technically really was not a success. I still had to put a lot of money in to make these happen. If it wasn't for, you know, a good friend and investor that basically helped me, I honestly treat that as another failure that just straight up did not succeed. It was a massive endeavor. I try to get 5,000 orders across 10 characters, each of them needed 500 orders, which I was very optimistic. I'm like, I got videos, I got the stuff, I got like, da, 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 da. I felt like very confident that I could do it. So when I didn't do it and I was only able to afford all four, which is still a massive, it's like, that's still huge. It's a massive feat. It's still, I put four toys out there.
Yeah.
So cut to this picture. Like I said, I was going through anxiety and like, fuck, I'm doing it again, man. Like, are they going to make it? I don't know. Like there's, like you said, there's like monsters is happening around same time. They're the exact same demographic as me, you know, I'm like, fuck. Okay. There's bad timing on my part. Kind of was waiting for his to end, but he pushed his back a week. So we kind of merged in. So like all those thoughts are kind of happening in my head. I'm like, fuck it, dude. I just have to like, with that imposter syndrome that keeps creeping up no matter what you do, I find in any career.
Yeah.
You have to just like fucking put it in the background and just push through. And like, that's the thing. Like every time that, like the only thing that literally holds me back ever in life is my own self-sabotage or like disbelief, you know? So I just was like, fuck it. I did my planning, hired my graphics designer, did all the artwork, all the things that I needed for the campaign and hit fucking enter again. But at this point, like I have been doing the marketing for those 2 years. I built up the newsletter. I built up all these things, which I can say now is still shitting me because, like, I have, you know, this newsletter and the following, but I've literally only activated like 0.5% of it. I'm like, come on, please. Like, I don't know what it is now that I need to, like, get people to convert, to really just be like, I believe in this. Let me back you here. Like, to make this next wave happen is just still a massive endeavor, you know?
Yeah, it is. And I mean, it's cool that only four at a time come, because though I know that 10 would have been amazing at the first run, four and like the like insanely good four are out and they're incredible. And I've seen like other interviews and stuff. So you're doing the rounds, you're doing all the things to make this happen. I mean, like, honest conversation, 5% conversion rate is still so high. Isn't the, I think the statistic is 10%. Yeah. I think statistic is like, if you hit 10%, like, dang, like you're killing it. So 5% is still really high. Tough in this. Are you going through the same factory and everything as you went with the other ones?
Yeah, everything. That's the beauty of it. Now that I'm like, I feel ultra confident. This is what happened in the past. Like, I never knew how to make a toy.
Yeah.
That's why when I started at 2012, I literally just started with what I could Google, which was the comic books, reading books, and, you know, the animation, little things like that. And I was praying that, like, someone would look at me like, hey, help me, let's make this toy together.
Yeah.
And hence I gave up that for 8 years, and then until the pandemic. So yeah, met Scott Henze, figured out, you know, how to actually move through the process, learn all the tricks and trades through more mistakes, through more errors, learn the true way to get a factory, got a factory vetted in, or got vetted into a factory, more or less. And yeah, once that happened, the production taught me a whole new set of learnings, a whole new set of everything, basically. And voila, like, now I feel ultra confident that I can create any toy I want. I created the lunch boxes in China. I created like the comic book printing and everything else. Like, I'm like, I feel very confident in my ability to execute. And it's just now I got to focus on getting this out there all over again and the marketing behind it.
That's so crazy. I do have to, like, what are your plans? Scott sculpted how many of these?
So back... I kept on saying 50-50 because, as you know, he did Major Racer and Colonel Custard first. But then they were digitally scanned, and Seba from Planetary Dog Toys redid them, basically. Because if you look at Colonel Custard, the original prototype, his mouth was closed and it was more grimacing. Mm-hmm. Now his mouth is open and it's like this completely different facial expression. A lot of things were kept that Scott put in to keep that charm and the hand sculpt. Mm-hmm. But a lot of things were just revamped completely. So for a while it truly was 50-50, five characters each. But now it's Scott's did Commodore Chris. I'll still give him Major Racer and Colonel Custard. So that's three. He's doing Lieutenant Lead and number two. So yeah, I mean, it's still five, but Bouncy was the other guy. But So Bouncy was something that he was he was part of the crew, but I actually just threw away that design completely, unfortunately, because it was just, I was spending more money trying to fix it, trying to make it work. And the sculptor was, honestly, it would just be a lot easier to just start from scratch. Mm-hmm. And I'm really happy with the outcome of that. So now Brigadel Bouncy is completely digital. Scotchy is completely digital. Sergeant Spore is completely digital. Corporal Can's completely digital. Specialist Sugar is completely digital as well. So yeah, it's a good mix.
Yeah.
But now, yeah.
So, the old school toy thing of like what happens with toy prototypes and stuff.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this.
Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have an engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet.
Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
Like, what are the plans for these prototypes?
Man, can I just say, Scott's too quick to throw shit away.
Does he throw stuff away?
Yeah, man. He threw everything away. Like, he knows that some things can't last forever. Like, he ran into the same stuff with, like, Ninja Turtles. I feel like he threw away a majority of shit. And a lot of stuff, like, the molds, like, yeah, they just don't last. But I'm like, just keep it for, like, keep
did safe. He throw yours away?
Yeah, so quick.
Oh, my
He said he had, when I reached out to him, like, hey, I'll pay you to send me over the things, because I wanted them for my collection, obviously.
Uh-huh.
It's, like, part of the making of.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't have them anymore. At first, he's like, oh, I got to look, but I think I might have thrown them away. And then he, like, confirmed, I only have Bouncy left. And I was like, fuck, I'm not even keeping Bouncy. So, yeah. So,
God dang it.
Scott's hilarious.
That's crazy.
I know.
You know what's crazy about that is he has sold prototypes. He has sold wax sculpts. He knows that, like, those things are worth something to people.
Yeah. And stop. I don't know why he continues to throw things away.
He's old school.
I don't know. He's just like, there's no space. Get this shit out.
That's crazy. Scott, dang it. The thing I love about the new characters that are coming, especially, is Spore. I like the sculpt, the arch of who, like, his, how he, like, is functionally standing, and it gives, its size is bigger, but it reminds me so much of Shredder's original sculpt and how they had to make him crouch, or how he was, like, hunched over a little bit. And for some reason, that those two go together in my head. When it comes to his size, which is bigger than the other ones, like, by a significant amount, how did you settle on the 5-inch mark for just that one?
Because his design is, like, he's literally, if you look at him from the side, he's curved and it's, like, hovering over someone, like, and that was, like, this, like, going back up the importance of story, like, we decided to start sculpting in the bits of story. So if you found this guy in a toy bin one day, like, you can kind of still get this sense of, like, who he is. He's overarching, he's literally, and he's, like, towering over, ideally, if you put Major Racer directly under him, he's completely over Major Racer. But more so, I like to place Colonel Custard underneath him, so it's basically, like, he's got Colonel Custard's back and he's just, like, overarching and just really just has this over presence, you know? So it's cool. And literally I just sculpted it based off of that. And then once he became that size, I was like, maybe this is the ceiling for future toys.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted to keep it in the same packaging. And that's why if you look at the packaging now, that it's some of the characters fit really well in it. And some of the characters look a little tiny for him, but they sit well. I found that nice medium, I feel. And, like, especially Commodore Chris, that's why it's, like, layer 3, which is cool. It shows his functionality and it shows its character. But ideally, Sergeant Spore will live in that case. Corporal Kahn's the only one that's a little bigger, so he'll probably have a dedicated box. But, yeah, the future characters I'll reveal soon will all be slightly – there will be some big ones like Spore, but I'm keeping that as the cap.
Okay. I mean, you have conventions coming up. DCon is coming up again. Is that something that you'll be at with your backpack and everything?
I don't think I'm going this year to DCon. I try to make it work, but the fact that it's going to Vegas is a little harder.
Yeah.
If it was Cali still, I have places I can crash or stay. Plus I'd see family and friends out there.
Yeah.
Vegas is, like, no man's land is really just a one stop. And since I'm not presenting, it's kind of a hard gamble.
Yeah.
I'm going to Cincinnati next week on the 17th through the 19th, I believe, is Cincinnati Comic Con.
Okay.
Don't even know why, but I chose it because Kevin Eastman's going to be there, and I really always wanted to meet him, and I wanted to display booth. Also, Larry Houston, who's, like, the original director of X-Men, is going to be there. So I just love to, like, meet these guys, show them 9 to 5 Warriors if I can, and just meet some idols.
Awesome. That's incredible. Kevin's gonna fall in love when he sees these characters.
We'll see.
So how long, I mean, the time this podcast comes out, it will be the 14th when this podcast releases. So when they're listening to it, how many more days will the Kickstarter have?
basically the 25th of October. So basically the 2 weeks from that date, pretty much.
Okay.
Like if that's the Monday, the 18th is that Friday, so next Friday.
Okay. So it's a big push for that. And what has been raised so far and what's left?
21,000 has been raised so far. I still
need
a good chunk left for I'm at like 46%. So I still need 45K to reach my goal. And that's the thing. Like if you're like on the back burner, like you're waiting for like the last 48, stop waiting for the last 48. Yeah. I hate that. Like everyone kicks in the last like few days and then you see it skyrocket. Like I really want to reach this stretch goal. So it's kind of twofold. I set my goal really low because I was like, the true goal is around 120K, but like 45K kind of covers some of the costs. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm pocketing the rest of it. So I just wanted to have stretch goals out there and I would love to like reach the battle bids. And so, yeah, that's the, I'm looking at it now. We're at like 2185.
Great.
So we'll see what happens.
That's crushing it. That's crushing it. That is, I mean, to be that far into it is already a huge milestone. So that can't be like just pushed aside. So if they're listening, go support this thing. Holy hell.
Let's get it, man.
I will say Kickstarter is always scary. I know that people find it scary because it's like no man's land sometimes because they have that. What's that thing at the bottom of it? Like not all projects are guaranteed or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Woo, that's a scary little thing.
Of like, I already did wave one. All the kinks are out. Like I said,
the
production of it is what I'm most confident about.
So, I mean, that's...
If you guys look at the prototypes
and
what the final product came out to be is like, I mean, they're just night and day. Like, that's why I didn't even like showing the prototypes originally. I was like, I know they're a little jank, but they're going to look amazing in the production.
Yeah.
So the first wave four is a testament to that.
Yeah. And as I think like one of the, a testament to like your dedication to this and how good they really are is Crisp. And not only from the sculpt and then the digital, whatever, but not only do they fit together perfectly, but like little pieces were added. So like they clip in together so that they don't fly up. Like it's there. It's there. When, if people ever
just
like,
satisfying is it there? Click.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it gave me the same rush when I was a kid, like, you know, things are supposed to come apart. So you like pull on it and you're like, oh, I feel like I broke it. It gave me the same rush. I haven't had that rush since I was like five. So it was awesome to have that. But I think that it's really cool that this is happening. And so, dude, I like the last part, you know how this goes, promote, plug, push wherever you want people to go to support this.
So the home base right now is Instagram at 9to5Warriors. 9to5Warriors.com is also a great place to pick up wave one while they still remain. We do have like a collector's bundle, which is awesome. You get basically everything I've ever produced, the comic book, the lunchbox, the thermos, and all four characters for a discounted rate. And of course, Kickstarter. So search for 9to5Warriors, 9 the number TO, and 5 the number Warriors, and you'll see the Bandits Strike Back, which is, you know, the name of the Kickstarter because it's a sequel. Why not?
Hell yeah. Dude, thank you again for coming on Toys on Tap. We can't wait to see these produced.
Thank you for having me, man. It's a blast.